The Return of Ragtime. It's the Beale Street Blues by W.C. Handy.
It's only a matter of time before we went back to Ragtime.
It's every other week will be Ragtime, because that was the dominant music from 1917.
Mm-hmm.
We can't not have lots of Ragtime on this show. Welcome to the 1917 podcast. 100 years ago today, I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joined with me is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, ahoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, ahoy, Vinny. I'm just listening to this right now.
I kind of like it, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good mood music.
So, Beale Street is the name of the street in Memphis. Yeah. Yeah. It got name-checked in that song, Walking in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And for, like, like 20 years, when he said, walking with my feet 10 feet off of the Beale, I didn't know what he was talking about. I assumed it was 10 feet off the field, but then I would listen, and it's like, no, he's not saying an F, he's saying a B. But then it was like, Beale? Is this some phrase I don't know?
You really studied the song.
Well, it was on a lot.
I felt like it was the
Torah. Yeah, it was in heavy rotation throughout the whole 90s.
Cool.
And I thought it might, for a little bit, I thought it might be a Judaism thing. Because I remember reading an article that talked about that Mark Cohen was one of the few, like, Jewish country stars.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned something about not being Christian in the song. So it's like, is this some sort of, like you said, a Torah reference that I'm not getting? Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's the most famous street in Memphis. I just didn't know anything about Memphis.
I've never been to Memphis. I've been in Nashville, not Memphis.
I don't think I've been in either one of them. We talked about last week that I drove
all the Springfield. You've been to Springfield, probably.
Yes, I have been to Springfield, which is a big town for music, but most all of Tennessee is a big music town.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like I've been to Nashville, even though I haven't. And I'm sure within like 5 years, my memory will go enough so that if someone asks me if I've been to Nashville, like, yep, definitely been to Nashville. I have clear memories of driving through the streets, parking, walking around, talking to people, going to music stores. That was definitely Nashville.
And man, when inside a store, you know, who's there? Fuck it.
You want to give that another try?
Don't worry about it. No, leave it in. I want to see my failure.
I want to know what a bunch of bums I'm working with.
I was trying to say George Jones. It wasn't coming out right. Did you really stop it?
No.
Oh, good.
No, I'm just looking for my notes.
I want to know my shame. I want my shame out there.
The 1917 podcast is brought to you by Iced Postum, a cool drink with a reason. Something more than mere icing is required in a cool drink to bring the comfort wished for on a hot day. The body of the beverage must be of character to lend efficiency to the temperature of the drink. What then more wholesome, pure, and cooling than a true food drink made of grains? Iced Postum! It is convenient, too, especially if you have Postum on hand for the regular morning hot cup. To make Iced Postum, prepare Postum in the usual way, let cool, serve with cracked ice, sugar, and lemon, or if you prefer, sugar and cream.
Again, this is an ad, by the way.
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is so long.
Yeah, it goes on forever. And this is...
Like they're lecturing you about the proper way to even have your post on. They don't even think about having it either way. The other way.
We tried regular Postum last week, and it has a very gritty residue at the end. It doesn't finish very smooth.
No.
No, it doesn't. But would you like to try Iced Postum?
I guess I should, yeah.
Yes, yes. Now, the only way I could really have Iced Postum is if hours before you came over, I prepared Postum and put it in the fridge. Do you think I did that?
I think you did. All right. That's a giant glass of Postum.
It is, and it is maybe a little bit too iced.
Did you actually put it in a freezer?
Yes.
That's not what, it just means it's over ice. It doesn't mean it's, what? It's like a fudgesicle.
Okay, it's just the top. It's just the top.
All right.
Oh, wow, this Iced Postum looks like frozen brackish water. They said to serve it with sugar and cream. Ooh, the whole bottom is frozen. Well, it's definitely cold. Do you drink iced coffee? Are you an iced coffee
guy? I love iced coffee.
I'm not a big iced coffee fan.
Is Postum like the brand name, or is it just the type of drink?
No, Postum is the brand name. Okay. I think they have an off-brand Postum, but that gets into like treat territory. Do you know what treat is?
No.
Treat is off-brand Spam.
Oh, okay. Never seen it.
Spam is about $3 a can. Treat is $1 a can for the same size can. Mm-hmm. So you start to think, what corners are they cutting that the people at Spam are not cutting? How are you saving $2 on production?
Yeah, like what animal parts have they resorted to?
Okay, so ice Postum.
All right.
Down the hatch.
I think I like hot Postum better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm getting a like cereal vibe. Like I'm drinking the milk of cereal.
Yeah, you're right. Like, yeah. You just had some like Cocoa Pebbles.
Yeah.
And this is the milk of the Cocoa Pebble.
Yeah, and you had it recently because this is cold. I thought it was going to taste a little bit like the Rhode Island drink. Coffee drink. No, what is it called? Coffee syrup. Have you ever had coffee syrup?
No.
It's like a syrup. Imagine like a hot the chocolate syrup stuff, except it has like a coffee flavor to it. So it's super sweet, and it's basically chocolate milk, but it's chocolate milk with a little bit of a coffee flavor. So it would be like if you needed to have like a six-year-old drink coffee without actually complaining about it, this would be the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Rhode Island's national drink, and this reminds me of that, except not as sweet.
It is. I don't think it tastes as hot. It's a little easier to drink, though.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to do this every week, everything that we advertise. Like, maybe not, like have leeches put on me next week, or...
I'll see if I can get leeches. I may have a guy.
Oh, by the way, just something to add from last week we talked about. Boog Powell is not in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, no, he's not?
No. He's in the Baltimore Oriole Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. But not the actual Cooperstown
Hall of Fame. No, like, they've retired his number in Baltimore.
Okay.
And, he didn't really have a great... He was a big hitter.
Uh-huh.
One of the top home run hitters. But he only batted .266.
Okay.
As a career. So he's not going to get in the Hall of Fame with those numbers.
No.
He also runs Boog's Barbecue at Camden Yards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you ever go to Camden Yards, you can meet Boog Powell. I met Boog Powell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I remember I was online to get some barbecue, and Boog Powell was signing autographs, and a kid came up to Boog and proudly is like, he's probably 7 years old. He showed Boog Powell his report card.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's sweet.
He's like, well, look, Boog, all A's. And Boog went, yeah, I do too good in school myself. And just kind of brushed him off. And
I remember I was talking to professional wrestlers one time, and their whole thing was that they were like going to schools.
We had this happen.
It was a community outreach effort to have...
By
pro wrestlers to keep kids to stay in school. And one of the guys, Albert, used to be a school teacher. So he was great talking about the importance of staying in school. And then the other guys came in. And the others were like, yo, if they cut me, I got nothing else going on. I got nothing else going on. I should have stayed in school because then I would have had options. I got nothing else.
Those depressed wrestlers.
These were like guys on their way up. And like 6 months after he did that, they had a story where one of these guys loved to eat hair. Thing. He'd go into the ring, they give him hair, and he just eat hair before the match.
So he really had no other options. I think they, like, Vince McMahon caught wind of this. It was like, oh, yeah, are you an option? Or you're going to need some fucking hair then, and you're going to love it. There's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, Vince heard him and was like, challenge accepted.
What else are you going to do, huh? Mm-mm. Hand jobs in an alley, huh? You got nothing.
So, the big story this week.
Oh,
The big story this week is about Matahari. Matahari sounds like hair, but okay, we're pivoting. Okay, Matahari. I heard her name. I knew the basic thing about being a femme fatale, but I didn't know anything about the real Matahari. I didn't even know that she was in World War One. I assumed she was in World War Two.
Yes, so did
I. I'm getting her mixed up with Tokyo Rose.
Okay.
Okay. I still don't know anything about Tokyo Rose, but now I'm an authority on Matahari.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's a Matahari story. She was born in the Netherlands, so she's Dutch. Her real name is Marguerite Zell. She was born to a rich family in 1876. The family became poor. There was some probable sexual abuse by a relative or teacher or something like that. She's, you know how some countries, like if you find gold or oil or something, just means like the country's going to be destroyed because it's just too much of a natural resource?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some women are like that with beauty. She's apparently one of, like, the world's great beauties, which just means guys are going to treat her like garbage her whole life, and she can never escape it.
Do you know why I hate you? Because you're telling this horrible story of this woman who's been abused, but I'm still laughing about the guy eating hair. So it sounds like I'm laughing at this. I can't stop laughing at the guys.
Okay, we're getting right back on track.
All right, don't make me do that.
I promise to never tell you a funny story again.
All right, thank you.
So at 18, Marguerite Zell marries a 40-year-old guy, and he moves her to Indonesia, which was the Dutch West Indies at that point. Maybe the Dutch East Indies, I forget which Indies it is. Mm-hmm. I'm bad with East and West. Oh, God, am I bad with East and West. Do you want to know how I need to...
You mean, like, direction-wise?
Direction-wise, yes.
So, like, you'll get on a highway and drive, like I'm going to California. Meantime, you're in Greenland.
If I'm getting on a highway and it says, like, 280 West, and I can't remember if I need to go West or East, this is truly, and I swear to God this is true, this is how I need to remember which way East and which way West is. I think of Horace Greeley's quote, "Go West, young man." It's like, okay, West is in the direction of California. And then I think of the John Candy movie Wagons East, which means coming back to the East. And I need to go through that duality every single time there's a West or an East.
Do you have trouble with North or South, too? Or?
No, North and South I'm fine with. And I don't know what my mnemonic would be if I needed to think of North and South.
You really, every time you have to go East or West?
Like 3 times a week for the last 25 years, I've thought about the movie Wagons East. And I wish I had a better thing to compare it to. Like, "Go West, young man" is this classic, iconic statement of manifest destiny. And Wagons East is the movie that John Candy died making.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to, like...
I saw that in theaters, because to honor John Candy.
Oh, yeah?
I shouldn't have.
No, it's not very good.
No.
No, but it's a good idea. It's a good premise for a Western.
Mm-hmm.
People coming back because they couldn't hack it. Because lots of people did. I'm holding my postum. Oh, it tastes like grape nuts. Okay. So, Marguerite Zell moves to Indonesia. Her husband, the 40-year-old guy who married her, he's a drunk, he's abusive, he has a concubine lined up. She never has had a good life, but she has an interesting life. And she learns all about the Malay culture, and she adopts the name Matahari. Matahari is Malay for rising sun. People think that she is Indonesian, mm-hmm, because she starts using this name and she has an exotic look. But no, she's Dutch. This is not why she's famous. She has 2 kids while she's in Indonesia. Now, all of the tragedies just keep on occurring. One of them dies very young, and the other one lives to adulthood but then dies. They both died from parental syphilis. Because the husband was sleeping around on everyone, and this was in the years before Alexander Fleming invented penicillin, when syphilis was like getting AIDS in the 1970s.
Do you know they still teach in health classes?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, working in school, so I know this. Here.
Yeah,
they still teach, like, you know, venereal diseases.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they don't call them that anymore.
No,
they're sexually transmitted diseases, but they teach syphilis. as if it's like the main thing kids have to worry about now. Like, they still spend a lot of time. Maybe we just have a health teacher that really wants to talk about it, but I don't know. But an inordinate amount of time is spent teaching kids about the dangers of syphilis in 2017.
Maybe they're teaching in order. Like we've always talked about syphilis first, so we're always going to talk about syphilis first, even though it's don't know anyone who has it. We could go with herpes. We could start with chlamydia or gonorrhea, but no, we're going to go with a class.
Yeah, I think this is okay. People get herpes still. People still get gonorrhea.
Yeah,
you know, obviously HIV.
Uh huh.
But yeah, syphilis. They give it equal time to HIV.
Yeah, and syphilis isn't a big deal anymore because you can just get a penicillin prescription and then it's gone. At least I think.
I think the last person with syphilis was Errol Flynn. I'm pretty sure he's the last one to have it.
But he's still like spreading it by some sort of Plinko chain of people he slept with who then slept with other people who slept with other people. So there's a theory that Mata Hari's two kids were poisoned because she apparently had an enemy back in Indonesia. But she ends up moving back to Europe. Her husband divorces her, doesn't give her any money for child support. She moves to Paris with a child and needs to support the child. She becomes a dancer, she becomes a model, and she starts riding a horse in a circus.
Mm-hmm.
She does all sorts of unusual things for money. Her rich family hates this. She becomes a contemporary of Isadora Duncan, the famous Paris dancer from the 1910s and 1920s.
Oh, very famous, yes.
Well, she's famous partly because she was driving in a convertible automobile and she had a long scarf, and then the scarf got caught in a wheel and decapitated her.
I thought that was Jean Mansfield.
No. This, I'm pretty sure, was Isadora Duncan. You can look it up.
All right, you want to look it up? Okay. I'm fine. I believe you. Okay. I believe you. You might be wrong, but okay.
So this is still not why Mata Hari is famous, why we know what her name is. But she was becoming famous in Paris back in the day. And she started to do dancing shows. Things kind of like what Josephine Baker would later do 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
She never removed her brassiere. She always kept that covered up. And she would often wear a body stocking. So it was like the illusion of nudity. There's lots of veils involved and lots of guys talking about how she's a stunning vision. But she was not what you would call a stripper.
Do you have a picture of her?
You can Google her, yeah.
Let's see, let's see how she looks. But I'm checking her today's standards, who she would look like now.
Oh, okay, yeah. They've made a couple of Mata Hari movies.
Yeah.
So who would you cast her as?
Let's see if I can see that. She's very clothed here.
Yes, yeah, this is a clothed picture of her.
That's a man with a mustache.
Sorry, I was skipping to the next pictures. There she is in a colored photograph.
I a little plain.
I can definitely see why people would think that she's Indonesian.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially since she's wearing an Indonesian dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's posed in
you're dressing like you're Indonesian. It's probably, you probably get fooled by the It's a Small World kids too, right?
Okay, here's another picture of her wearing her Salome outfit. Literally holding up a gauzy gossamer veil. And she has a big ornamental snake thing on her head.
No, no. All right. 1 to 10. What do you give her?
I don't want to rate someone from 1 to 10. I don't feel comfortable doing that.
No, it's okay. It's okay because she's dead. I know. Look, I want to be as progressive a male as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing: she's doing a job that's really about her looks.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair for us to comment on her looks. It's not what's Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
okay.
Somebody who's there for her appearances.
Right.
I think it's fair for us to judge her appearance and still be, a couple of woke guys.
And I could say that maybe Mata Hari was so definitively considered a classical beauty that she defined beauty. And for the next couple of years, what was considered beautiful was just what looked like Mata Hari.
All right. Let's see. Good body. Especially for two kids.
We are now looking at a picture of her mostly unclothed.
Yeah.
She's still wearing her brassiere, and she has 5 pounds of ornamental bracelets on all of her limbs.
Yeah, curvier physique, you know, which I guess was popular then and sort of lost popularity. Now it's coming back.
You know who could play her? I think Anne Hathaway could play her. There's something about her eyes and her nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, you know what she kind of looks like in the face? Michael Imperioli. Doesn't she?
No.
You don't see a Michael Imperioli look to her?
No. Michael Imperioli with, like the big nose?
Yeah, no. I don't, like a pretty, like, feminine version of Michael Imperioli.
Michelle Imperioli.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, you could still, you know, there are women that look like men, like they're like male sibling, and they're attractive women, but that's why they look alike. You know, that should be his keep attractive that sister.
Hole. Keep digging that hole. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't see Michael Imperioli there.
No.
Folks at home, please.
No, but, you know, now that I said Anne Hathaway, I'm looking at it and like, because I said it, I now can't not see it, but I still can't see Michael Imperioli.
Interesting.
Okay, so we've got a lot of story, but I'm not a hurry to still tell. She becomes a courtesan all around Europe. Courtesan is a... I don't know if courtesans are still around anymore. It was like a holdover from like the 15th and 16th centuries. It was not quite a fancy way of saying prostitute, because I don't think sex was always necessarily involved. But it was more like what an escort is like advertised as opposed to an escort.
Where, yes, you have to negotiate the extra.
Right.
Support, yeah.
Right. A courtesan was a beautiful, graceful, intelligent person who you could spend time with, and you paid money for that time, and you went to social functions, and I guess it's still around now, just in terms of that whole like celebrity date culture, where if you hear two celebrities are dating, in the back of your head you're like, are they actually dating, or are they just pretending so that they can get their picture taken? I think a courtesan was like the origin of that,
or sort of when celebrities have to go to proms now. I feel bad for celebrities, don't you?
I don't think about it too much.
I do. That one really bothers me.
That's
like, yeah, like you're forced to go to proms now if you're a celebrity. It's not enough to just like be a celebrity. Now it's like, you know, some weird kid asks you to his prom.
Wait, is this all celebrities? Like, is Frank Langella, does he have to go to the prom every year?
I think he's dead, so.
No, he's still alive. No,
Frank Langella died.
No, he's great. He's doing great.
He died.
He's great.
Look him up.
Frank Langella, born 1938, still died. Alive.
Oh, he's dying next year. Sorry, I read that wrong. He's slotted to die.
79 years old, he could kick both of our butts any day. One hand tied behind his back.
All right, so you said if somebody's going to ask Frank Langella to a prom, does he
have... Does he have to say yes?
Well, he probably should, you know. But no, I've noticed this. Is the trend, the growing trend, is celebrities get asked to a prom, and pretty much have to go, or they're assholes.
So it's like the writ large version of asking someone like, hey, will you be on my podcast, when you're like in front of a theater and you can't say no, I won't be on your podcast.
Yeah.
Not that we've done this.
We're thinking about it.
Yeah. But it's like an ambush thing where it's not a fair question to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that. Or, oh, and when do they really get them? If it's like a military formal.
Oh yeah!
Oh, you're there in your you know formal Navy uniform.
Oh, because if you say no, you hate America.
Yeah, then yeah. People like get on you, like you know, like you know, like fuck you, Scarlett Johansson for not
yeah.
going there.
And
you know?
She's like, I'm married, I have kids, I don't want to date a 19-year-old.
Actually, she's getting divorced.
How do you know this stuff?
I like Scarlett Johansson. I stay abreast of
you. Stay
things.
Abreast.
Yeah.
Was that a pun?
Could be.
Okay. So, back to Mata Hari. So, she's traveling all around Europe. She's a well-known courtesan, very well-respected. She becomes friends with a Russian pilot named Vadim Maslov. And he gets shot down, and he's blinded, but he's still alive. And she wants to go visit him. And she has, like, this free pass. Because she's Dutch, Dutch is neutral all throughout World War I. So she can go anywhere she wants. And she thinks, well, I'm Mata Hari, and I'm Dutch, and I've got this passport, so I can go visit him when he's overseas in Germany. But she's living in France, and the French version of MI6, called the Deuxième Bureau, they say, you can go, but here's the deal. You need to become a spy for us. So the French say, you have to become a spy. There's a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is that we will give you $1,000,000 if you do what we want. But what we want is we want you to bang the Kaiser's son.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think he's leading a bunch of regiments, and I bet we can get information from him if you sleep with him. So she says, okay, I will play along. I will try to do this, but I can't just walk up to the Kaiser's son because I have no idea where he is, and he's moving all over the place.
Yeah.
So I will start to inculcate myself into the German high society and see what information I can get from other people. So she does spy stuff for a couple of years. She never quite gets to the Kaiser's son. This could be because she didn't want to sleep with a guy, because as a courtesan, I'm sure she holds herself in a higher esteem than like a common street prostitute.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're doing this for your country. I would think that this be better than doing it for being a courtesan.
Right, right. Close your eyes and think of France.
Yeah.
So, in January of 1917, one of her German contacts, whose name is Major Calle, he goes on the radio, which the French were listening in on, and he starts talking in code about this great double agent, this great secret agent he knows. And his code is bunk. It's terrible. And they can tell, obviously, who it is. It has to be Mata Hari. There's no other person that he's talking about that could possibly be anyone other than Mata Hari. So,
like Hari Mata or something.
So the French find out, and they're aghast that they've been, like, working with her for years, and they haven't gotten anything. She's never slept with the son of the Kaiser, and they've given her all this information in exchange so that she can work her way into German society, but she hasn't given them anything else. So they fire her because they feel like she's become basically a double agent, that she's working for the Germans instead of the French. Now, on February 13th, 1917, just exactly 100 years ago today, Mata Hari gets arrested by the Deuxième Bureau. They say that she was giving information out about other spies, and some of the other spies died as a result of it. And in the press, she was charged with the death of 50,000 French soldiers, which is huge. And that
has to be one big mass kind of thing. It's really some of them, right?
I think
it just seems like quite the estimate that they're
right. Right. I think they were basically saying everyone who died in the last year, it's because of Mata Hari.
Yeah.
We're gonna blame it all on her. And the blame continues. They said that she used secret ink to correspond with people, and they could never find the secret ink, which was proof that it existed. The trial lasted all summer long, and her being Dutch was used as evidence that she was a liar because people thought that she was Malaysian, but no, she was really Dutch.
So proof right there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, more proof. And France ended up doing evidence tampering to make it look like she was even more guilty than they thought she was. So she was basically a scapegoat because France had been in the war for years and years at this point. They thought it was going to be 3 months at most, and it's been 3 years now, and it seemed like, you know, a third of the country had died, and they didn't want to take responsibility, so they were able to blame this pretty lady. She ends up being sentenced to death by firing squad, and this is how she goes out. They give her a blindfold. She refuses. No blindfold. She blows a kiss to the executioners before they shoot her. That's how
and
the story
and
ends.
He was so taken with her that he immediately. Yeah.
I don't know if she was like saying goodbye or if this was her last ditch attempt. Yeah,
her
last ditch attempt where he's like, oh, Mata Hari likes me. Maybe I'll just shoot everyone else other than her and she and I can run off together.
It kind of reminds me of the way Christopher and the Sopranos died, actually.
You have Imperioli on the brain. So, also in the news this week, small item. A synagogue opens up in Madrid, in Spain, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, what's a big deal about this is that it's the first synagogue that opens up in 425 years. You know, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah.
What Spain was known for that year, if you went back in time and asked, was they kicked all the Moors and all of the Jews out of Spain that year. That was during the the big excommunication and the the Inquisition.
Yes, that's Inquisition. Yeah. The Inquisition.
And so much fun. So that was 425 years later. They finally started to bring some Jews back to Madrid enough so that they needed a synagogue.
Do they have a second one?
I don't know if they have a second one, and I'm hoping the first one is still standing. I don't know if they have any mosques.
In 1918, they destroyed the synagogue.
Oh, I just finished the ice postum. Oh, it finishes rough. It finishes rough.
It has a really bad aftertaste.
Oh, ooh. It's like drinking a guitar. It's like if you put a guitar in a blender. And it's like, this is probably a high-end guitar. This is like a Martin or a Guild. This is a quality guitar I'm drinking right now. So, we're on to Nickelodeon, where we talk about a movie from or about 1917. I'm trying to keep us away from World War I, because America is not in World War I, so we're going to do as much stuff around the edges as possible. This week's movie is Iron Will. It's from 1994. It stars Mackenzie Astin, who's...
From the Astin family dynasty. Right?
Yes. Yes, his brother is Sean Astin from Lord of the Rings.
His father's John Astin, Gomez Adams.
Gomez Adams, yep. And Buddy Ryan from Night Court. Big fan of Buddy Ryan from Night Court.
I was talking about the football coach.
No, different Buddy Ryan.
I got stumped for a little bit there. I didn't know his name was... I remember him being on Night Court. I didn't know his name.
Oh, well, I remembered because my last name's Ryan, too. So okay. There was some kinship there. So, Iron Will was Disney's de facto sequel to White Fang. They made White Fang, the Jack London novel, into a movie in 1991. It took place with wolves in the snow, and it was a decent-sized hit for them. So they decided to make another one. But they didn't want to do Call of the Wild, because Call of the Wild has no people in it. It's just a wolf going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So they found another story, which then became kind of fictionalized. So Iron Will is about a teenager named... Guess what his name is?
Iron.
I should have seen that coming. No, his name was actually Will. And Will's dad dies. And he had a job delivering the mail. But he's in North Dakota, so he delivers it via sled dog. So he already knows sled dog stuff. And he finds out after his mom dies...
It's just like that movie with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Snow Dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a dead father in a Disney movie. It's mm-hmm. It's part of the rules. So after he finds out his dad dies, there's more misfortune when he finds out that they're going to lose the family farm, the actual family farm, because they can't make the mortgage payment. So they need $20,000. And Will finds out about a $20,000 claim if you win a sled dog race that goes from Winnipeg down to St. Paul, Minnesota. So he signs up for this, and he does a lot of training, and he needs to learn how to stay up all night because he can't ever rest, because that's the way how you win the race. There's a reporter who's apparently a bad guy in this movie, played by Kevin Spacey. And you can tell this movie was made in 1994 because there's no way Kevin Spacey is taking that role as like the ninth male lead in a mid-budget Disney movie.
I don't know. I remember once while Kevin Spacey will be in a movie where like what is he doing this? He was just in a movie where he played the voice of a cat.
Yeah, yeah, and he was in Fred Claus.
Yeah.
He's made some bad decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this was before he could make those bad decisions, when he was just a working actor taking on any role he could.
Like, I bet we can get him for this podcast.
You think we can get Frank Gaffney for this podcast?
No.
Frank Underwood?
No. We can get the voice of the cat.
Oh, the voice of the cat.
Yeah.
So this also features David Ogden Steers.
Oh, looks like our friend James Brown.
Yeah, looks like our friend. Which was a joke because David Ogden Steers in his 40s looked like our friend James at 19.
Yes.
Yeah. And James is now in his 30s and he does not look like David Ogden Steers anymore.
No.
No.
No, but you know, there's some similarities still. You know, he could go full on Steers at any moment, really.
Full Steelers?
Full Steers.
Our last segment is the birthday, and having a birthday this week is Carl Karcher. I did not know who this guy was, but you know him better as Carl's Jr.
But he's not Carl Jr. He's Carl's.
This was what was weird. His name is Carl Karcher, but he's not a junior.
Yeah.
He's, if anything, he's a senior. He had a whole bunch of kids, One of them may have been Carl Jr., but I haven't been able to get that down with research.
But what's with the possessive of it?
Carl Jr.'s, the same way that you would say Wendy's. Like, it's Wendy's hamburger.
But it's Carl's Jr.
It's Carl. Oh, you're right.
It's not Carl Jr.
It's not Carl Jr. It's Carl's Jr.
Carl's Jr.
Oh. Oh. You know, people on the West Coast have been thinking about this for decades.
They probably have the answer.
Yeah.
We don't have them around here.
No, we don't. I only ate there one time. And it was great, but it led to a bad experience.
With what?
Well, we were flying in, my family and I were flying into San Francisco, and we got in around 4 o'clock, which is like 7 o'clock New York time, or New Jersey time, because we're in New Jersey, but still we say New York time. So we went to a Carl's Jr., which we'd never been to before, and we ate there, and it's a fantastic burger place. And then I get a phone call from my boss, because I was traveling on work, and she said, so we're going to... the whole family's invited to go out to eat at a very fancy place at 7 o'clock. Now, this is 7 o'clock, like, San Francisco time,
yeah.
Which means 10 o'clock at night, and we've already just stuffed ourselves with hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
So we go at 10 o'clock at night, and my daughter doesn't even wake up. She just sits in her stroller and just falls asleep the whole time. And people keep asking her if she wants food, and she's just, like, passed out.
Yeah.
All I want to do is like, join her, because I want to fall asleep, too.
In a stroller.
Yeah. But everyone is ordering, like 6 and 7 dishes each, and it's like, oh, the last thing I want to do is eat. I just want to sleep. But you just keep putting more and more food on the table, and I can't eat it. It's a terrible feeling, because normally I love stuffing my face. But when I've already stuffed my face, there's a narrow window when I no longer want to.
I bet I could do it.
You could?
I think I could do it again, yeah.
Yeah, with 3 hours,
night,
I thought I could rally.
I can't eat all in the morning, but at night, I could definitely do like a second dinner.
Okay.
Like a Hobbit kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I have dinner one, dinner two. But I get confused by Carl Jr. and also Ruth's Chris.
That, I've actually called the company to figure out what that is.
I'm a lunatic. We got a lunatic on the line.
And they gave me an answer that there was a place called Ruth, and then someone named Chris bought it, but I didn't accept the answer, because that's just like...
Well, shouldn't it be explaining Chris's and Ruth's, and Ruth bought it?
Why? Just change the name.
Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, yeah.
If your name is Ruth, and you have Ruth's Steakhouse, and my name is Chris, and I buy your steakhouse, I'm just changing the name to Chris's Steakhouse.
Yeah.
None of this Ruth's Chris. There's not like a whole series of Ruth's Bob's Steakhouse, or, you know, Ruth's Alice's Steakhouse. It doesn't mean anything. I don't know who these people are. They're not famous people. Why are they putting their names up there? It's confusing.
Yes, yeah, so I guess Carl's Jr. Maybe it's like is it a junior cheeseburger, like a Wendy's? Like...
Oh, maybe that's where it came from. They had like a cheeseburger that was called the Junior.
I've never eaten one. Are they sliders, yeah. Or are they like...
No, they're big burgers.
Mm-hmm.
I think their thing is called like the $6 burger, which is like, you know, a sizable burger. You feel like you're getting your money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
But in honor of Carl's Jr., I decided that I'd give you a quiz about other famous juniors in the world.
Okay.
Okay. Some of these you're going to get. Some of them are a little challenging.
Okay.
We'll see. Okay. Hall of Famer for the San Diego Chargers who died young.
Junior Seau.
Yes. This is tough. The name of the baby kidnapped in Raising Arizona.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I've seen this movie 1,000 times. How do I not know
this? It's one of the best jokes because they just mention the name all the time.
Oh, what is it?
Nathan Jr.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because Nicolas Cage's character is named Hi, but he kidnaps a baby named Nathan Jr. Never once does he think about changing the name or the fact that he's calling the baby Nathan Jr. and he's not Nathan. Henry Jones Jr. is better known as?
Indiana Jones.
Good. This science fiction author dropped the Junior from his name midway through his career after his father died.
Ray Bradbury.
Close. Kurt Vonnegut.
That's right.
Yeah. Some of the early books are called Kurt Vonnegut Jr., and then it's just Kurt Vonnegut.
Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. He wrote an essay that it seems like there's like a father and son who wrote books together, but it's just him. Okay. This NASCAR driver's number 88. His dad was number 3.
Dale Earnhardt.
Yes, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Okay, I'm not looking for a person I'm looking for a podcast. Name me the bad movie podcast that uses the Danny DeVito Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Junior as its logo.
How did this get made?
Correct. They cut out the faces of the three hosts and put them over.
That is another one I've seen in theaters.
I saw that in theaters as well.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I had to put the movie Junior in, but I didn't know how, so that was how.
Back then, it's like you just went to a movie because there was some movie out. Like, right. You got nothing to do.
Right.
You're probably what, about like 15 at that point, something like that, like 14, 15. You had nothing to do, so you'll just see any crap movie. Yeah. Like the idea of thinking, like now I have kids, and you have kids too. Like, you get to see like three movies a year when you have kids. Like, just, right. So you have to use that wisely. You wouldn't waste it on Junior now.
No. I can guarantee you that there's going to be like 9 movies I want to see this year. You know what I'm going to see in theaters this year? Boss Baby. I may end up seeing Boss Baby twice. Okay. Who is the love to hate him villain from the show Dallas?
J.R.
J.R. Ewing, yes.
Is it Junior?
Yes, I looked it up. John Ross Ewing Jr. So when he was called J.R., that was both a reference to his first two initials and to the fact that he was a junior.
Okay.
Clever. Okay, name the sentient baby owl who broadcast for the WWE.
J.R. Jim Ross.
Yes. It's a private joke between Vinny and I that doing a Jim Ross impression just turns into doing a baby owl.
He's eating hair.
Okay. Name the black Jewish Rat Pack member with a glass eye.
Sammy Davis Jr.
No, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh.
That's what it says here.
Okay, that's gotta be right.
Yep, it's written down, so it has to be right. Okay, name the man who had the most consecutive games played in Major League Baseball. He's a Baltimore Oriole.
And he's not Boog Powell.
No, he's not.
All right, it's Cal Ripken Jr.
No, it says here Martin Luther King Jr. That's what it says. It's written down. Okay, final one. Jazz pianist and crooner.
What?
Jazz pianist and crooner. Crooner, like a singer, like a lounge singer.
I don't know this one.
No? Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to get you to... If you said Harry Connick Jr., I would have said JFK Jr.
Well, you know, I guess I should realize, yeah, that he's a crooner.
Yeah.
I don't think of him as a pianist.
You don't?
Even though he plays piano, I just don't think of him as a pianist. Do you like Harry Connick Jr.?
I respect the fact that he does so much stuff. Like, he has a TV show now. Like, he has a daytime talk show.
He always had one of those faces I want to punch. Hmm. Something about him, you know? I don't like any of these, like, young guys that, like... Not that he's that young anymore, but, like, the younger guys who try to sing, like, the old style stuff. Like, if you're, like... You know, like a guy in, like, your 20s and you break out the fedora and you're crooning, fuck you.
That's a subtweet of Michael Bublé, if I ever heard one.
Yeah, you're Bublé types. I hate that whole thing. I don't buy it. It feels very affected to me. To, like, you know, be putting on, like, this old, like, you know, way of, like, singing, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be like if all right, let's just say this were, like, it's 1981, okay? And some guys were running up dressed like Albert Jolson.
So there's certain things that you're not allowed to bring back.
Yeah.
Yeah, certain things to just stay in the past.
Yeah, well, look, I like that old style. I love Sinatra, but I want to listen to Sinatra. I don't want to listen to some jerk who got turned down from Carnival Cruise and is now doing this. Like, you know, selling albums to a bunch of, like, middle-aged women that, you know.
Are hats ruined, do you think? Do you think anyone can wear a hat anymore, or is just ruined? Have the neckbeards destroyed it for everyone? And
like nobody can wear a hat now without it being like an affectation of some type?
Yeah, because I seem like the sort of person who would wear a hat, and I haven't because I'm scared of being thought of as a person who would wear a hat.
Maybe there's what will the new affectation be? Like walking sticks, maybe?
Their scarves?
Monocles?
You know why monocles were considered a sign of wealth? Because they actually were. The idea behind a monocle was that you couldn't just get, like, a monocle at, like, a Bavarian CVS from 1890. Mm-hmm. You needed to have it in engraved or cut to match your particular eye.
Okay.
So it was a custom job. because otherwise it would just fall out or it would start cutting you.
Well, it's a great prop if you're shocked.
Yeah.
My monocle went flying.
Now, I don't know how you keep the chain on the monocle.
I took second prize in a beauty contest. I can't believe it.
Do you think monocles are effective? Like, maybe if you were Sammy Davis Jr. Or
you only had one eye, yeah.
If you only had one eye. Oh, I'm sorry. If you were Freddie Prinze Jr. and you only had one eye, then you would be fine with a monocle because you only need one lens. Mm-hmm. You don't need a pair of them.
You're right. I don't know what you want me to say. I believe you're right, yes.
So that concludes this week of 100 Years Ago Today. We'll be back next week to talk about Anastasia and the Archangel Explosion. There's yet another explosion. This is a big explosion year. I would say this was the most explosive year in record. But you'll hear all about that next week. Until then, ohoy, ohoy.
Ohoy.